And so that still remains as an issue to be resolved through the process. In prior editions of my, the two versions I attached originally to my evidence in chief and then to my supplementary, like the other planners involved, my wording changes around an exemption moved, and I was essentially seeking a line of best fit with other witnesses who were seeking similar changes, all with the purpose of ensuring it's as concise and integrated as possible.
I understand, and that's helpful. I just need to be really careful that I've understood what it is you are now recommending in terms of the community water supplies and whether they should be excluded from the provisions of Plan Change 7 or not. Because when I read your supplementary evidence and the version of the plan change contained therein, there is what I describe as a carve-out for those uses.
Correct.
Whereas when I look at the joint witness statement, that carve-out no longer exists. I don't understand what... I think what you're telling me is that you've moved beyond a carve-out for community water supplies and you're content with the schedule in Plan Change 7 as addressing the needs of community water supply.
Yep.
You're flagging an issue with duration.
That's correct. So just again, Mr. Moore, just to re-emphasise that point, because I do accept it as an important one. Mm. The issue of duration, there were fixed positions which had been clearly conveyed to the court through prior evidence. So that was, from what I can see from the agenda, that was put to one side.
Yes.
What the joint witness statements, and I think quite successfully, progressed with firstly with the technical experts and the community water supply conference, and then subsequently the one with the planner, is to go through the workability, if I can call it that, particularly of the rules and also the schedule. An outcome of the JWS, and quite significantly in my view, is a definition now of community water supplies. So that's not, as you say, a carve-out, but we've now got proposed in PC7 a very specific reference to community water supplies, and what are they?
So, just so I'm following, you're no longer recommending that community water supplies be excluded from the provisions of Plan Change 7?
Well, yes, I am. So that's the position is around, and to qualify that, it is squarely on the issue of duration. So for further specificity, the carve-out, to use that term, would be to the policy 10A 2.2 and 2.3, which relates to that the term of 6 years, either in the case of 2.2 for new consents or 2.3 for applications for renewed deemed permits for consents expiring for December 25.
So let's just focus on the policy 2.2, so the new consents. Is it still your opinion that Plan Change 7 and that policy should not apply to those applications?
And when I looked at PC7, and I'll need to expand out on this to give a full response to you, Mr. Moore. Let me put simply, the purpose of PC7 at the heart of it was to address this imminent issue, as we know, around the expiry of the deemed permit in October 2021. I think apart from that, the whole focus and energy of the ORC would be on preparing the new regional land and water plan. In saying that, The focus has brought in a number of quite key considerations from the perspective of the TAs and in the scope of what I'm dealing with, community water supplies. And that, I think, just reflects the regulatory, statutory landscape that we're in with two quite significant MPSs, the urban development and the freshwater management, both of which have to be given effect to in the new, amongst other plans, the regional land and water plan. From my perspective, the key thing with PC7 is to ensure there's as best or as smooth a transition to that new regional plan. That is the focus, in my view, for the ORC. When I looked at the general tenor of PC7, it was very much around it's process orientated. It needs to be kept very clear, kept very simple, as narrow as possible. In contemplating, so essentially to me there were two pathways. The first is community water supplies, you just simply carve it out, as you say, exclude it. The second, you incorporate it, you accommodate it, you anticipate and provide for it within the scope of PC7. For me, that second option, put simply, is possible, but it would involve Plan Change 7, essentially quite a significant component of it being devoted to community water supplies, so possibly with a new, an RDA or DA consent regime inserted into that plan. I also had the broader consideration of Te Mana Rotu Wai under the freshwater management MPS, that all councils with regional functions, regional councils, unitary authorities, are all having to address. And it seemed to me that this issue is not one that's specific only to the ORC. And through the witness statement, we ended up with a definition of community water supplies in the document. And that's addressed some of the workabilities. But within that, so for me, that just solely leaves the question of duration. Is it appropriate that community water supplies, their term is 6 years, along with everyone else?
Now, that's a very lengthy answer to a question as to whether your evidence was that policy 2.2 should still apply to community takes. And your answer is leaving me, I guess, in a state of confusion as to precisely what it is the territorial authorities are seeking by way of relief for Plan Change 7. So I've got the joint witness statement, and I understand that. I've got your supplementary evidence, and I understand you to be saying that's no longer the version you're pursuing. But I now have you telling me that there needs to be significant additional text put into Plan Change 7, maybe a restricted discretionary or a discretionary activity to manage community water supplies. And I haven't seen any text or any recommended wording in relation to any of those options, so I'm left really unclear about precisely what it is that the territorial authorities are seeking and you are recommending to this court in terms of what to do with Plan Change 7. So we might have to go a little slower in terms of step by step.
Sure.
So that I can try and get a picture of what it is that you are recommending.
Okay. So just to clarify, I signalled there were two pathways, but the first pathway, which is a carve-out and exclusion, is both the TA's relief and my view. I outlined pathway two just to give an indication of what an alternative could be and the implications of that.
Right. So it is your opinion that the carve-out for the community water schemes, that PC7 just simply shouldn't apply to those schemes. Is that your primary opinion?
That's correct, yes.
And in terms of the version of Plan Change 7 that I should then look at that achieves that purpose, which version is it?
It would be the one attached to my statement of supplementary evidence, where I sought to incorporate changes that aligned with those from the witness for the hydro.
Right. And then, so I've understood what you've described as a second pathway, as an alternative option if the court doesn't accept that community water supplies should be excluded from the reach of Plan Change 7. Your evidence is that a more bespoke set of provisions would be required to manage reconsenting of those schemes.
That's correct, yes.
And also applications for new water permits for those schemes.
Yes, that's correct.
But in relation to the wording that would achieve that outcome, you haven't yet put forward wording that would achieve that.
No, I haven't. And I would, as I said, this issue it essentially can't run to the core of implementing the MPS FM. If the court wished to go down that second pathway, to me practically it sounds like rather than just myself preparing provisions, it would be almost what I call a governmental response, e.g. MFE, ORC and myself on behalf of the TAs, the three of us in another witness conferencing session. Because these are complex provisions.
I understand the complexity, but in terms of putting forward provisions for consideration, the opportunity for that is typically in evidence, isn't it?
That's correct, yes.
And to be fair, you've put forward in evidence your primary position, which is, and I'll describe it as a complete carve-out from PC7 in relation to community water schemes.
That's correct, for the reasons I indicated.
Now, in terms of those reasons, there are a number of layers to those reasons, as I read your evidence. You've referred to some provisions in the regional policy statement and the partially operative regional policy statement.
Yes.
You've referred to some provisions in the national policy statement for urban development.
Correct.
The national policy statement for freshwater management. And you've also taken into account evidence provided by other witnesses for the territorial authorities in relation to their operational desires in terms of infrastructure and future infrastructure plans.
That's correct, yes.
Now, I'm going to need to explore each of those subjects with you, but before I get on to that, I want to explore with you and get an understanding of what your understanding of the uses to which water is put when water is supplied by community schemes across the Otago region. Now, you've addressed this issue in your evidence at paragraph 49, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes.
And you've referred to a memo attached to your evidence from somebody by the name of Ms East.
That's correct, and she is a policy analyst at Dunedin City Council.
Now, she's not before this court, but you have read her statement and you give, essentially adopted that information.
That's correct. I saw it as information and quite informative, so I adopted it.
Yes. And when you look at that range of uses, how would you describe them?
All-encompassing.
And when you think about the drinking water component of those uses, do you have any factual information that informs you what proportion of the community water takes are for drinking water consumption?
Looking across the five TAs, the document that I did source was attached to my supplementary evidence, which was the Water Conservation Management Plan, again from Dunedin. There were some caveats in that plan around the accuracy of the data, but they indicated that 57% was for household residential, which I would categorise as being drinking water. And then the remaining, just for completeness, 19% I think was described as unaccounted for, and then the residual industrial.
We'll come back to that document shortly. But you were in court yesterday when Mr. Heller was giving evidence?
That's correct, yes.
And you will have heard the evidence he gave in relation to the Stirling scheme?
That's correct, yes.
And there the proportion of water for drinking water or perhaps household needs, approximately 15% in relation to that scheme?
That's correct, yes.
So I want to explore a little with you the information that you have appended to your supplementary statement of evidence in relation to the Dunedin water supply. And if I can take you to page 16 of that document. And there you'll see section 2.2, current water consumption. And you were bang on with your 57% as indicating the proportion of water in relation to this. I'm going to say this scheme, but perhaps we could go back a step. What's your understanding as to the scheme or schemes that have been taken into account in relation to the proportional use of water in section 2.2?
In terms of those categories, the three categories?
No, just what geographic area are we looking at? Are we looking at a single water supply for Dunedin City Council, or are we looking at a range of schemes owned and operated by Dunedin City Council?
My understanding from this document is it's urban, urban Dunedin areas.
Okay, so we now look at section 2.2, and we can see there a helpful pie chart showing the 57% for residential need. We have unaccounted use at 19% and commercial industrial at 24%. Now, when you look at that residential component, is that what you look at and think of as the drinking water component for human consumption?
That would not be the complete use of water, as we know, but it would be for human uses. So it could be, obviously, ablutions, or it could be cleaning a vehicle or something amenity-related, such as gardening.
When you think about irrigation of sports fields and the like, would that fit into that category?
I would have thought it would fit. Unfortunately, the pie chart doesn't have another slice in it for what I would perhaps term recreation or other sort of public uses. But it just by way of exclusion, I wouldn't have thought it's that's residential. Possibly it fits in commercial or industrial.
So staying on the residential, this document gives us some other clues as to what might be included in that, and you've touched on one of those uses being the water used on gardens and such like. Do you recall the percentage of that component that's used for gardening watering or garden watering?
No, I don't.
I'll take you to page 27. You'll see there under the heading Demand Strategy Managing Customer Demand, you'll see some bullet points at the bottom, or towards the bottom of the page. In the paragraph immediately preceding those bullet points, you'll see a reference to garden watering.
Correct, yes, I see it, yep.
And that accounts for 25% of total domestic usage. So a quarter of the 57% is used for, we know here, garden watering.
Yes.
So if we're thinking about the proportion being used for human consumption, human drinking water needs, would deduct off that 25% of the 57%?
If it was limited solely to drinking water, then yes, that's correct.
And so when we think about the water being used for human consumption in this context, it's not the majority use if you're thinking about it as more than 50% of the take.
Yes, and I mean, there could be a quibble around kind of human consumption, gardening as in growing vegetables or crops, but I think more realistically it's gardening as recreation, as amenity. So yes, I accept that.
I want to turn back to page 16. And you'll see there, underneath of the pie chart, some further information about the uses to which some of the commercial and industrial sites' water is placed. And you'll see in that paragraph reference to including some farm/irrigation activities. So some of the 24% water is used for those types of activities.
Yes, that's correct, and it's also referenced in Ms. East's memo as well. She acknowledged that as well.
And when you think about farm and irrigation type activities, do you think about those as more rural based activities?
Yes.
But we don't know from looking at this document the proportion of water being used for those types of uses. That's all we know is that included within the range of uses are those types of activities.
Yes, that's correct.
And you have no further information or evidence in relation to the further breakdown of water use in Dunedin City?
That's correct, I don't.
And you have no further evidence or information in relation to the breakdown of the various uses across other schemes in the Otago region?
No, I don't.
So what we do know is that there are a range of uses, and that in the relation to the two examples where we do have that breakdown, the drinking water component is either a relatively minor percentage, 15% in the context of the Stirling scheme, or somewhere in the order of 40% potentially in relation to the Dunedin City Council scheme.
Yes, that's correct.
So when you're thinking about how community water supplies should then be treated in terms of the planning framework, were you clear in your mind when you were preparing your evidence that there was a wide range of uses to which the water was being put, extending into areas well beyond the purpose of human consumption?
Yes, I was.
And when you carried out your analysis of the planning documents in relation to the provisions that you say support treating community water supplies differently, did you have in your mind the range of uses that the water was being put to?
Yes, I did, amongst other considerations, including the practical one around severability, which was referenced in both my evidence and also in the discussion yesterday.
Perhaps highlights the biggest challenge here. It's the same pipe taking the water from the source.
That's correct.
And thus, you accept there is a real tension in terms of how those other uses should be treated in the context of water allocation?
Yes, that's correct.
And that also creates a tension in terms of how Plan Change 7 should approach this issue?
Yes, it does. I agree with that. But I just, as a further additional comment to that, is the fact that, as I said at the outset, PEC7, although it does not give full effect to the MPSFM, given timing, it will be transitioning to a new plan that has to, and this issue will be fair and square, needing to be addressed.
Rest assured, we will come back to the MPSFM, but not just yet. Except that one of the functions of the regional council is to manage the use of water, or the uses to which water is put, including for the purposes of managing the quality of water.
Yes.
But I want to turn now to the provisions in the proposed regional policy statement, or I should say the partially operative regional policy statement. You have noted some of those provisions in your evidence in chief, and your counsel referred the court to some of those provisions yesterday. And I want to start by getting an understanding as to what is covered, or what your understanding is in terms of the meaning of infrastructure as that term is used within the document. And to start that exercise, I thought we might usefully start with the definitions in that document.
Yeah, just now, pause whilst we get to the right.
Yeah. Right, so we're in the partially operative regional policy statement, which is in Common Bundle 2.
It's on its way, thank you.
Tab 3. To start on page Common Bundle 649. Now you're working off the Common Bundle.
That's correct.
Very
page
good.
649.
Thank you. And there you'll see a definition of infrastructure. And you'll see if you cast your eyes down to subparagraph E, reference to a water supply distribution system, including a system for irrigation. Now, tell me if you've read that definition or you're familiar with the definition.
Yes, I am.
That's the relevant part of the definition in terms of community water supply schemes.
It will be a subset of E. Yes, that's correct.
And when you look at E, do you have in your mind that when infrastructure is used, it's the pipes and the system that is being referred to? It's not the water or the allocation of water that's conveyed through the system?
Yes, that's correct.
And when we move over to page CB651... there's a further definition that was touched on yesterday.
Sorry, just bear with me. I'll just have to find the bundle of that, isn't it? Sorry, so the
651.
Oh, yes.
About three pages.
I have it now. Thank you.
Yep. And you'll see there the definition of municipal infrastructure. And it's subparagraph A that's relevant in relation to community water supply schemes?
Yes.
Now, when you read that definition, so that incorporates the definition of infrastructure, so we're talking about the pipes and the systems, not the water.
That's correct, yes.
And then when we look at subparagraph A, it further restricts the parts of a scheme which are covered by the definition of municipal infrastructure to the conveyance infrastructure between source and its point of treatment.
Yes.
But not beyond that point.
Yes.
So, in simple terms, so I understand that it's perhaps covering the pipe between the river or the intake gallery and the treatment plant. But it's not covering the pipes and the distribution system beyond the treatment plant.
That would be my understanding, yes.
So when we're looking at the policies which refer to municipal infrastructure, we're looking about policies dealing with the pipes and the conveyance infrastructure between source and treatment station.
Yes.
And that's how those policies, that's the relevant part of the policy that should be being looked at in the context of these schemes.
Yes, that's correct.
So with those definitions in mind, I'd like to go back to the policies that were referred to yesterday and in your evidence. Policy 4.3.1 and 4.3.2. Common Bundle 562. You'll see, sorry, are you with me?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
So let's starting with policy 4.3.1, managing infrastructure activities. That's managing the activities of the pipes in the system, not managing the abstraction of water.
That's correct.
Or the allocation of water. And then when we look at policy 4.3.2, there's a reference there to nationally and regionally significant infrastructure, which incorporates a reference to municipal infrastructure.
Yes.
And likewise, that's not dealing with the supply of water or the allocation of water.
Correct.
And when you look at policy 4.3.4, adverse effects of nationally and regionally significant infrastructure, when you look down that list, it's focused on the effects of the infrastructure itself as opposed to effects of taking or allocating water. So,
yes, that's correct.
So when you think about these policies and their relevance in the context of Plan Change 7, they don't really assist us, do they, in terms of the allocation or the supply of water, which is really what Plan Change 7 is about?
In purely in terms of the management and control of water takes, yes, that's correct.
That's not the end of the matter in terms of the proposed RPS. There are some policies that do deal with the allocation of water within what I'll describe as the water chapter. That's Chapter 6, as I understand it, and you've referred to this in your evidence in chief, your paragraph 20.
Sorry, which plan are we looking at now?
That's a very good question.
Is that Chapter 6 of your operative water plan, or is it?
I think it's Chapter 6 of the Regional Policy Statement.
Regional Policy Statement, okay.
actually. I've taken you back in time to the regional policy statement, and that's what you're referring to in
the operative.
Yes, yes. In this part of your evidence.
Yeah.
And except that chapter 6 is the chapter dealing with water and the allocation of water.
Yeah.
And you note in your paragraph, it's at the end of your paragraph 80, which is easiest to find if you look at page 22 of your evidence in chief.
Yes.
You'll see a heading there, proposed regional policy statement.
Yes.
So the paragraph immediately preceding that.
Sorry, I'm just a little... not quite there yet. We're talking about the operative regional...
policy statement.
So we're not talking about the document found at tab 3, but some another document?
That is a different document.
Oh, okay, right. Which tab would you like us to go to?
Possible that that document is not in the common bundle.
That's okay.
I've been working off the relevant provisions that were pulled through into the brief of evidence.
Yeah. Well, what we could do is take a copy of what you need, because the line of examination is really important. So you're examining now from about paragraph 80 onwards, are you?
Yes.
And of the evidence in chief.
Yes.
Which, and so that commences the explanation to objective 6. For one state to be able to meet economic and social, cultural well-being of Otago's people. Is that, am I on the right page?
You're at the right place.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you've got two choices. Is the text which has been included in the brief of evidence comprehensive, or should we simply get a photocopy or flick onto the screen the operative PS, because we can do that if we had enough time. Unfortunately, it's not in the common bundle, so we're needing to take it out of Google. So how would you like to proceed?
I might put my question to the witness, and then depending on the answer, we might have to go back through the provisions.
Yeah,
they are relevant to the issue. Looking at the way that they've been pulled through in the evidence in chief, I suspect that it's picking out the relevant parts as opposed to the full text.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm concerned about.
Risk.
That's the risk. You might actually not have the whole context, and the context is context is everything. Yeah.
I might check with the witness. So when you've pulled out these relevant provisions, is this the full text of these provisions, or is some of the material excluded on the basis you didn't consider it relevant?
I'd be cautious and say it's probably the latter. I've tried to be succinct and not verbatim drop statutory text into the document. Sorry, I couldn't be confident on that.
Okay. Well, so do you want to see if we can't get it up on the screen?
Let's see if we can do that.
So, Freda and Charlotte, do you know what we're after? We're after the operative RPS for Otago. There's two documents. There's one's a proposed and one's an operative one. And we're wanting to... put that up onto the screen. The operative. Yeah. No, we're in the operative. We're in the fully operative
the
one
fully,
now. Yeah.
Yes, the fully operative.
Yeah, we're sort of backtracking in time.
I'm just looking at the council's web page.
So if you search regional policy statement on Google, but it does say that the regional policy statement for Otago 1998 is now revoked.
Oh. Wow.
So,
I guess if you
things
you
have perhaps moved on.
All the evidence assuming that prepared. That is, you want to check that through to the players, Megha, he'll know.
Yes.
Yep.
So there isn't actually a copy of it on the website
anymore. No, no, I'm struggling to see it when I
I have a hard copy back in the office, but...
No.
Probably why it's missing from the bundle.
Okay, so Mr. De Plasmic is not shaking his head. It's been revoked, has it? The operative plan? The operative RPS. Mm-hmm.
It was only the freshwater chapter that was not operative in the proposed RPS, but it is now effective.
Oh, we're talking about your old document, your old RPS.
So it's,
It's gone, you've revoked it.
I'll double check if it's okay.
Okay. This, of course, is the timing and sequencing. Your questions are important. Do you want to take a five-minute break whilst Mr. De Plasmaker checks through?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Yeah, okay,
and I can then I'll then move on to the proposed regional policy statement, which also includes some relevant provisions.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just perhaps on a timing, public notice of the now operative one was the 5th of March, so it's come in following the evidence in chief, which is perhaps the source of confusion.
Okay. The leapfrogging happens. Okay. So we'll take a 5-minute break and come back, and Mr. De Plasmaker can confirm that that's
very
solved.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Please all stand.
And if we are to be questioning, we'll just let Frieda and Charlotte know because we'll pull it up on
incomplete.
In the bundle?
I don't.
I'll find out.
Yeah. I don't even know.
Thank you for the indulgence.
That's okay.
We have on the screen the partially operative Otago Regional Policy Statement 2019, amended as at 15 March 2021.
Okay. Right. So it's that which isn't in the bundle, as opposed to some 20-year-old RPS which is gone. Is that right?
And so the 20-year-old one that's gone is not in the bundle, so that's convenient.
That means
it's not
you don't
a relevant
have to.
Matter, so I don't need to go through Chapter 6 of it in relation to whether the objectives and policies in that document gave any preference to community water supply schemes.
Yep, and so just, Mr. Toos, can you confirm that there is a section of your evidence which no longer is relevant because the plan has been withdrawn or whatever the technical term is? What are the paragraphs? If that is so, what are the paragraphs?
Thank you, yes. So that, that's in my evidence in chief, commencing at para 74 and concluding at paragraph 80 on page 22 of the evidence in chief.
Okay, so 74 through to paragraph 80 inclusive, no longer... I've to be deleted because the plan has been withdrawn.
Correct.
Okay.
Revoked is the term
revoked.
Used.
I was going to say there'll be some.
It's a bit of an anomaly in terms of the language in the Act, but
I'd
say they are revoked.
I've never worked for a regional council or district council, so I don't know. So anyway, has been revoked.
Gone.
Right. Therefore not relevant. Okay. And so now we're looking at, and indeed there's now an amended plan as of 15th of March 2021, and those provisions are not in the bundle but are on the screen. Is that right?
Yes, although, to be fair, the provisions in the bundle will be pretty close to what's on the screen. Mm-hmm. I just haven't done the comparative analysis in terms of what's changed. What I will do is I'll provide to the court hard copies of the 15 March version.
Okay.
But in terms of the questions for the witness, as we work through the provisions, we'll have them on the screen. I've quickly cast my eyes over them, and they appear to be the same in terms of the partially operative version. So, they do not appear to have been changes. Now, just to check with you, Mr. Toos, have you analysed this most recent document? Or were you unaware that had become partially operative since you put pen to paper in your evidence in chief?
I haven't re-reviewed it, but yes, I like everyone else. I did look at the website last night and saw the revoked.
Yes. Very good. One step better than me, I'm afraid. All right. So in your evidence in chief, you've stepped through what you say are the relevant provisions in terms of the partially, or the, I'm going to call it the partially operative regional policy statement. Just as I've said that, it's probably the operative regional policy statement. I've confused myself. It's the operative regional policy statement.
Well, possibly a compromise operative in part. But it's, again, subject to council resolution, I guess.
Right. I think it has the seal on it. It will be. It's the... It's a quirk. It's still referred to in the footer as the partially operative Otago regional policy statement.
If you look at, scroll down a bit further, there are some provisions that remain subject to court proceedings.
Yeah, exactly, on the page that were there.
Yeah.
Is that something to do with Otago Harbour or something?
It's the port.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right, partially operative. Now, you step through the relevant provisions from your paragraph 81. Now, we've already traversed those parts in Chapter 4 in relation to infrastructure, so we're not going to go back over those provisions, but we are going to look at the provisions relating to water allocation. And you've set out in your evidence what you consider to be the relevant objectives and policies. The first one that you refer to is objective 1.1.
Yep.
And when you read objective 1.1 on its face, it's a very broad objective.
That's correct.
And it does not single out community water schemes in terms of the wording in the objective.
So perhaps if we could just throw that up on the screen, objective 1.1.
Page 19 of the electronic.
Yep.
Yep. So there we have it. Can you see that from where you're...
Thank you, yes.
Yes, very good. So when you read that objective, it's a very broad objective, as perhaps you'd anticipate in a regional policy statement. It's not drilling down to a level of detail in terms of specific activities.
That's correct, and it just reflects Section 59, and it's 1.1, so it's up front.
Yes. So some colour is given to that objective in the policies that then follow. Policy 1.1.1 relates to economic wellbeing. And again, a fairly broad policy, which doesn't single out community water schemes.
Yes, that's correct.
And so... we then move to policy 1.1.2, and we see a little more specificity in relation to that policy.
Yes, that's correct.
There's no direct reference to community water schemes in that policy.
No, it's still talking very generally around resources in the round.
But in fairness, you have referred to subparagraph E, which you point to in your evidence, promoting community resilience and the need to secure resources for the reasonable needs for human wellbeing. So that's starting to add a little more colour. But again, it's cast in fairly broad language, and that could apply to a range of uses beyond community water schemes.
Yes, that's right. It's I'm looking at that and thinking the resources, you need to secure water resources as amongst many other resources for human wellbeing.
And it's not about allocation of resources, it's as much about securing the health of resources if we think about a river system.
That's correct, and it's also with the preference to undertaking subdivision use and development. Well, in fact, everything under Section 59, it is around giving the fundaments, I'd call it, for the community.
Sure. So we then move through into Chapter 3, which deals with the values, including intrinsic values of ecosystems and natural resources, are recognised and maintained or enhanced. So if we scroll through to page 31 of the electronic. You're familiar with this objective?
Correct.
And again, when you read this objective, this is about securing important values of ecosystems and natural resources. So it's about sustaining the natural environment. It's not an objective dealing with allocation of water resource.
That's correct.
And you've referred to policy 3.1.3. Which does then provide a little further colour in relation to the water allocation and use. And there are three sub-paragraphs of that policy, and those are the provisions that you've pulled through into your evidence in chief.
Yes, that's correct.
And when you look at those, the language still is very broad, not directed specifically at community water schemes.
That's correct.
And then you have also referred to 3.1.3 subparagraph B, which is the avoiding of over-allocation and phasing out existing over-allocation. And you accept that community water supplies may need to play their part in relation to how over-allocation is phased out?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, and that also the MPSFM, which we'll get to, obviously.
And then for completeness, you've referred to policy 3.1.4 in relation to water shortage. And again, this is not dealing with the allocation up front of water resources. This is policy providing some policy position as to how water shortage issues may be managed in the event of water shortages.
That's correct.
So when you look at the objectives and the policies in both Chapter 1 and Chapter 3, those objectives and policies do not single out community water supply schemes for priority treatment when it comes to the allocation of freshwater resources.
They don't by themselves, but we've touched on the Chapter 4 provisions around infrastructure, but no, with the takes themselves, there isn't that primacy.
Now, just so we're on the same page, you did accept that the Chapter 4 provisions dealing with infrastructure did not relate to matters associated with the allocation of water.
That's correct. It's purely on infrastructure.
want to move on now to the National Policy Statement for Urban Development. Now that is in the Common Bundle, volume, at least volume 2 of my folder. Volume 3, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Tab 6. You have that, yes?
I do, thank you. Yes.
Well done. Now, if I understand your evidence in chief correctly, you point to the NPSUD as a reason as to why you say the allocation of water to community water schemes should be treated differently or excluded from Plan Change 7. So I've understood that that's one of the reasons.
Yes, that's correct.
I just want to work through to understand how you reached that conclusion by looking quite closely at some of these provisions. And I want to start with the with the definitions again. So if we look at page 6 of the document, CB787, you'll see there some definitions. The first one I want to take you to is development capacity.
Correct.
And you'll see that that definition in subparagraph B incorporates the provision of adequate development infrastructure to support the development of land for housing or business use, and development infrastructure is then further defined immediately below.
Yes, that's correct.
And when you look at subparagraph A of that definition, network infrastructure for water supply, relevantly, that's one of the provisions that you've referred to in your evidence.
Correct, yes.
And when you look at this definition, you accept it's the infrastructure, not the actual water supply, that's the focus of the definition?
That's correct, and that just reflects it as an NPS regarding urban development, yes.
So just to tease that out a little bit, you say the NPSUD is about the infrastructure, it's not about the allocation or supply of water.
That's correct, yes.
To move to part 3 of the document, and again, this part is dealing with the requirement for providing development capacity.
Sorry, which were we at?
Page number 14, CB795.
Yep.
Now, this part incorporates a number of the definitions that are set out at the front of the document, including the two definitions that I've taken you to, except the focus again here is on infrastructure. It's not about water allocation or water supply.
Yes, that's correct.
And then when you turn over the page to part 3.4, you'll see that this part deals with the meaning of plan enabled and infrastructure ready.
Do you want us to read the whole thing?
I might just step... It might help, actually, because I do step through it.
Okay, so just bear with us.
Now, throughout this clause, there's reference to short-term, medium-term and long-term. Those phrases are defined. So short-term is what?
Up to 3 years, medium 3 to 10, long 10 to 30.
Thank you. So when we look at the obligation in relation to development capacity being infrastructure ready, so I'm at subclause 3, it steps through the requirements in relation to infrastructure ready in relation to each of those time frames.
That's correct.
So in the short term, subparagraph A, the requirement there, so between up to year 3, is that there is adequate existing development infrastructure to support the development of the land. So the infrastructure needs to be in place in the short term. That's
yes.
The obligation.
Yeah, good to go, put simply.
And then when we look at the medium term, so years 3 to 10, the obligation changes, doesn't it?
Yes, correct.
So the infrastructure can either be in place or, alternatively, funding for the adequate infrastructure to support development of the land is identified in an LTP.
Yes, that's correct. And actually one of the quite principal concepts within this is to integrate the long-term planning infrastructure provision with land use planning.
But the obligation in terms of having infrastructure ready, it's in a 3-year window, isn't it? So the infrastructure doesn't need to be ready to go into the medium term, but the funding needs to be in place or identified in an LTP.
That's correct, yes.
Now, when you think about what a regional council is to do with the NPSUD, the document itself provides some indication as to when it might need to give effect to the document and perhaps how it might need to give effect to the document. And some information or guidance is provided in part 4 of the document in relation to timing. I can take you to page 30, CB811.
CB811, was it?
Yes.
Yep.
And there in clause 4.1, it indicates the relevant documents that might need to be amended to give effect to the NPS UD.
Yes.
And when you look at those documents, can you explain to me what documents they are?
Well, yes, the references to local authorities are both regional and the relevant district or city councils. So they're at the top of the hierarchy, the regional policy statement, and then in terms of the urban development, this is land use planning, so it's the district plan to give effect.
And so what's missing from that list is reference to a regional plan.
That's correct.
And Plan Change 7 is a regional plan.
That's correct.
And when we think about what a regional plan's doing and what Plan Change 7 in particular is doing, it's dealing with the allocation of water, isn't it?
That's correct.
And the NPS UD is dealing with infrastructure, not the allocation of water.
Yes, that's correct.
And so it has no relevance to Plan Change 7, does it?
In terms of the pathways, because behind this is obviously Section 30 of and 31 of the RMA, which in the case of the regional council, it has dual responsibilities around infrastructure planning as well as obviously the control and management of water takes, amongst other things. So it's that integration aspect which I think is the key here, because no council creates infrastructure out of the ether without the purpose behind it, which is provide for growth and to ensure conveyance. But I do accept the fact that the actual management and consenting of water takes sits separate to this.
In terms of the integrated management that you refer to, that you say sits in behind all councils' functions, in terms of the NPS UD, that provides a framework for establishing a future development strategy, or an FDS?
That's correct, yes.
And in the Otago region and others, when is that required to be completed by?
Well, that would be under it would be the standard 3 years, sorry, six years is the, just bear with me, I'll just find the
sure.
FDS. So that's under, it's on the Common Bundle, page 799, and on that page, subpart 4, it's section 3.12 sub 1, which sets out the requirement.
And so when you think about the establishment of the FDS in the Otago region, it hasn't been done yet?
Correct.
But it is going to be done over that period?
Well,
the obligation is to do it.
It is to give effect, yes. It will have to do it, yes.
And in a sense, when you think more broadly about the regional council's planning framework to come, so the new land and water regional plan, the FDS will dovetail quite nicely into the timing around that document, won't it?
Within 6 years, yes. And that comes back to the overall integrated management function.
Except it's important not to preclude the opportunity for the appropriate integrated management of resources to be achieved across the region.
Sorry, could you repeat the question? I didn't catch the first bit.
You accept put it a different way, it's important to ensure that the integrated management of resources across the region is important.
Yes.
And it will be important not to preclude the integrated management of resources occurring in terms of enabling a future planning framework to be implemented.
Yes, that's correct.
Let's move to the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management. And you address this document in your evidence in chief. Perhaps I could take you to your paragraph 7 in your summary on page 2.
Sorry, I'm just on. Clear the desk. Apologies. Yes.
And here you record your opinion that the forthcoming land and water plan is the most efficient and effective way to ensure water takes for community water supplies are managed in accordance with the NPS for freshwater, and in particular the hierarchy of obligations that make up Te Mana Otawai.
That's correct. That is my view.
So when you think about how that framework might be implemented, it will need to be implemented in a timely fashion in order to give effect to Te Mana Otawai.
That's correct, in accordance with requirements in the RMA and the process that's set out in the RMA as well.
And so when you think about that and you think about the importance of that document in the context of the allocation of freshwater, it's important, isn't it, that freshwater is not allocated for significant lengths of time or significant durations which would preclude the giving effect to or the achievement of the Te Mana Otawai outcomes.
With regard to community water supplies, I think the key thing with, as we know with Te Mana, is the three tiers. So absolutely the first tier, the health and well-being of the water space, that is the default, and that fundamental concept. But then you do have two gradations below that, as we know, with the health needs of people above the social and economic benefit of communities. Mm. So the issue then becomes is when to achieve priority one, in instances where you do have, I'll put water quality to one side if you've got degradation, but with water quantity, then decisions have to be made around allocation. And I think it's outside this exercise, but this sense of priority runs counter to, like, for example, a first-in, first-served type approach. It's that, it is, in summary, a fundamental change to how water management is exercised in this country.
But isn't what the territorial authorities are trying to do here is to perpetuate a first-in, first-served philosophy by seeking long-term consents for community water schemes?
I think they have their drivers, and they were just discussed yesterday. So, for example, they're not in the business of generating new water use per se. They're there to manage it. They're there to they've got the requirements to provide infrastructure, as we've just discussed, to accommodate growth, to even accommodate growth that they may not themselves have planned for, and then have a competitiveness margin and the like. What that then means is that the TA's role means that they do need that certainty of the take for infrastructure, so that they can confidently say they have sufficient to accommodate the growth or their existing communities.
So do you say that a Tier 2 Te Manawatu Wai requirement or priority trumps a Tier 1 in the context of a community take?
Absolutely not. That's the priority remains, the health and wellbeing of the water.
But you can't get to priority 2 until you've resolved priority 1 and the health needs of the water body, can you?
That's correct.
And then when you think about the breadth of uses to which water is being put in these community schemes, it's only a small proportion, or a smaller proportion, that might fit within Tier 2.
I think this comes back to just the reality of as we discussed previously, the infrastructure is geared up around single delivery systems. So you're then looking at, well, what is it principally used for? And there is very much a sense of a gradation, and I think as we discussed yesterday, from water supply schemes where the supply which you would think would fit within the second tier priority is probably ancillary to the primary, which would be essentially rural irrigation purposes. The reverse of that is the major urban schemes, which we've just talked about.
Well, is that really correct when you think about the percentages we talked about in relation to the Dunedin City urban area?
Well, in terms of the absolute percentages, I think it's more the end use, the provision of the water. It's treated, it's potable, it's circulated to the community. Beyond that, unless there's exceptions like shortages and things like that, generally a TA won't involve itself in regulating or managing that. And then there's the economic aspect. Metered water is obviously expensive. It's not used generally for irrigation and the like. Or there are other restricted or unrestricted supply schemes in place.
So do you subscribe to the view that once the water is treated, it's water for drinking consumption?
No, I couldn't say that, given the breadth of uses which the TA folk have indicated.
And this is where there's a problem or a challenge when you look at the three priorities in terms of Te Manawatu Wai. Perhaps the majority of the uses to which water is put would fit into category or tier 3.
That could well be the case, yes.
And again, that makes the potential achievement of the tier 1 responsibility in terms of the water-centric approach and putting the health needs of the water body first even further at risk.
To my way of thinking, there's two sides to the ledger. So with this priority system, with Te Manawatu Wai, the health needs of people, it would seem reasonable to me that if priority is accorded to community water supplies, and accepting the fact that that would be at most a principal use or a primary use, for the most part is used for drinking or other human consumptive purposes, but there's many other uses. I think the other side of the ledger...
What do you mean by the most part in that context? It's important.
I'm thinking in terms of if you're defining something by primarily, then that would be what I would consider to be... a primary purpose is, you know, this is the chief purpose, or if it's primarily, then it's for the most part.
Does that also... And well, it's relevant to the definition, but we'll explore
correct.
It a little bit
yeah.
now. So do you see that as the main part, say, by volume of the order taken, or are you thinking of it in a different sense?
I think it would be primarily in terms of volume in this case. So, I mean, rate of take, but more so I would have thought just the quantum of water that's been used under a headline of community water supplies.
And the quantum of water used for what?
If it's principally for human drinking water, then it'll be human consumptive purposes, such as obviously drinking, but also health and those sorts of things.
Sorry, that's for human consumption, but also...
For example, ablutions and the like. So water coming into a residence, it's used for for cleaning or for washing, drinking and the like, food preparation. All of which would, in a general sense, fit within that. It's good. I'm always coming back to the Te Mana Rotowai Priority 2, which refers to the health needs of people. So from what I can see, drinking water is not exclusive, it's an inclusive list, but it's of that nature, health needs of people.
When you think about the three priorities, Te Mana Rotowai, do you accept that priority one or tier one needs to be secured before you move on to tier two and tier three?
Well, yes, you'd need to know what the baseline is in terms of health and wellbeing.
And when you think about the work program that the Otago Regional Council has committed to, it will be seeking to establish the allocation framework to give effect to Mana Rotowai in its new land and water regional plan?
Yes, that's correct. And the associated work is, as you referenced, the freshwater management units.
And that perhaps is why you say that it is that plan that is the most efficient and effective way to ensure that water takes for community water supplies are managed in accordance with the NPSFM 2020.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yep.
And just further to that, as I mentioned before, potentially down the track there could be hard choices to be made between community water supplies that would fit generally than Tier 2 and Tier 3 uses.
And that'll be part of the allocation discussion and consideration when it comes to dealing with that
yes,
framework.
Yes, that's correct.
And if you're thinking about more broadly an over-allocation of water within a catchment, and you start to think about how that over-allocation might be dealt with, you accept that those priorities may inform how the over-allocation is resolved?
I would have thought so, given that it's a very clear hierarchy.
And so, again, it's important that Tier 3 priorities are not locked in place for significant periods of time prior to that framework being established.
That's correct, yes.
I want to move next to understand how you consider an application for a community water supply would be processed and treated if community water supplies are carved out from the reach of Plan Change 7. So I read your evidence and understand your opinion to be that Plan Change 7 shouldn't apply to community water takes, at which stage they will be reconsented under the operative regional plan water.
That's correct, yes.
And in preparing your evidence, have you reviewed any of the recent applications that have been lodged with the council to renew water permits?
No, I haven't.
Do you have any understanding or knowledge of the durations that have been sought in relation to these?
No, I haven't. No.
Are you familiar with the Environment Court's decision dealing with the Stirling Community Water Supply Scheme?
Yes, I am. I read that back in January and reread it more recently.
Do you recall the duration sought in that?
Consent was granted for 25, and then the appeal related to seeking the full term available under the RMA, 35 years.
And so the effect of long-term durations will lock in place the allocation made to schemes for that period of time absent a review?
Absent a review, yes, that's correct.
Now, you've considered the relevant provisions in Chapter 6 of the Regional Plan Water in your evidence in chief. And in particular, at your paragraph 103, you have set out the current policy that guides the decision making as to the duration of a consent to take water.
Yes, that's correct, 6.419.
And when you read that policy, there's nothing in that policy that pushes towards short-term consents.
Well, in some ways this is a policy drafting, but each of these policies has a fairly lengthy explanation that follows it. But just purely looking at policy 6419, it's just simply the consideration under A, the duration, the purpose of the use, and a TA, if it's that making an application, would be pointing to the 50-plus year life frame of the infrastructure, and then possibly also F, the cost of that provision of that infrastructure. So that would be the rationale for seeking that long term. But there is, but I agree with that aside from that comment.
So the platform's there for the argument to be made for 35-year permits?
That's correct. I mean, at the end of the day, any applicant can apply for that term, seek to apply for that term.
Yes. Based on the only application that perhaps you're familiar with, having perused the decision in Stirling, again, confirms or highlights that the territorial authorities are seeking lengthy durations on permits for these schemes.
To give themselves certainty around their infrastructure investment, then yes.
So if we think about your drafting of, or your recommendations in terms of the drafting of Plan Change 7, in respect to community schemes, Plan Change 7 simply is not relevant. That's how I read your supplementary evidence.
It comes back to those two pathways and...
let's not get into the second pathway.
No,
let's stay with your
I have no intention of either, Mr. Moore. Yes, that's correct. So in terms of community water supplies, it is, and again it comes back to that linkage with the responsibilities and drivers, you could call it, for TAs to plan and provide for growth.
So in a sense, business as usual under the current operative plan?
In terms of applying for resource consents for TAKES, yes.
Yes. And the experience tells us lengthy duration sought in relation to that infrastructure.
That could well be, yes.
So that would be the likely outcome of the business as usual or the status quo approach continuing if Plan Change 7 doesn't apply to community schemes.
That would be the case, yes.
But I want to move now to the second pathway that we just said we weren't going to talk about, but we will. So this is the work from the joint conferencing of the planners. And just to be clear, this is an alternative in the event that the community water schemes are brought into the Plan Change 7 regime. And work was undertaken to ensure that the methodology in Schedule 10A4 would be able to calculate an appropriate rate and or volume of water for the community water schemes.
Yep.
And my understanding is that you accept that the schedule as now amended would be fit for purpose in that regard?
That's correct, yes.
Now, a question was asked by Commissioner Edmonds yesterday in relation to Step 4, which is the step in the methodology used to remove atypical data. And that is on...
it's on not page numbered, sorry.
It's on page 9. Every second, the even pages are numbered for reasons
right.
I can't explain. But you have the methodology
I
here.
I do, thank you, yes.
And you'll see there that Step 4 doesn't apply to community water supplies or where the primary purpose is for hydroelectricity.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, Mr. Heller was unable to advise the court why that carve-out was there because my understanding is he wasn't at the planning conferences for obvious reasons. Are you able to provide some... clarity as to why the Step 4 isn't used or isn't to apply to community water schemes?
Yes, I certainly can. And this, I've without breaching the confidentiality of the joint, I can confirm there's a considerable amount of time on this topic. So if we look at the methodology and go back to Step 3, the preceding one, there's a change there, so if I'll just read it out. Any measurement that exceeds the authorised consented rate, and then there's a cross out of the words by less than the margin of error of the water meter, is rounded down to the authorised rate. So that if I can convey what our discussions is that meant the headroom of the consent. There were pop exceedances, pop-outs, which could be poor data, could be errors, whatever. They were rounded down. Step 4, again, if I can just notionally say this is the headroom of the volume or take of water, were ones that were within that. And that was... occasions, and this applies to both hydro and community water supplies, where you get random spikes that go up that are still within the headroom. And then the discussion was around, well, how do you then address those? Community water supplies, simply because you do end up with peak spikes. A small community might, I don't know, have a large event on a certain day and have the whole equivalent of the population turn up. It's still within that ceiling of the overall allocation. But then how do you, when you're working out the take over a long duration of, say, a year, how then do you then treat that? And so the discussion around four was to actually set out a methodology for that. And there seemed to me, and two schools of thought around this atypical data is, it's a matter of professional judgment of a hydrologist as to what do you do when you get these instances of errant data, as opposed to let's be really clear and set out a methodology for the hydrological staff or consultants to manage this, which is the steps for sub A to G.
So why wasn't that relevant for the community water? I just didn't quite lost the thread at some point there.
It's simply because over a continuum of a year, you had this little, a small blip, which from the hydrologist, they it's atypical data, it's an error. So rather than counting that as being, it's again, the headline is up here. You've got a year, so a calendar year of results, and it's a reasonably, seasonal thing, and then suddenly you've got a little blip that goes up, or another one here. Is how do you address those? That was my understanding of the conversation.
So it's perhaps a valid blip, if I could describe it poorly, I must say, compared to, say, just an error blip. There's a legitimate reason for it in the context of community supplies.
That's right, yeah. So it was to ensure that the measurements reflected a maximum use, but without the data being distorted by small individual one-offs, valid or not valid.
Okay, thank you.
Time for a break?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, I know that our five-minute break, we just worked, and you guys were working as well. So time for a break. Right, and I take it that you now got access to coffee if you need it.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yep, okay, all right, we'll take a quarter of an hour.
Please all stand.